Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Well, hi, we are back with our listeners again, Jeannie. How are you today?
I'm fine, and I'm looking forward to this show. How about you? Do you have good weather?
No, it's been a very gray day.
That was a mean question, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a mean question. This morning when I went walking with my friends, we all said, wasn't it kind of dark this morning? Because we were questioning when it was going to become daylight even. That's how dreary it was today.
I know.
But we all got out there.
It was like pitch back black at 7:30. I don't know about later than that, but I was thinking the same thing. Like, I thought the days were getting longer. Not shorter.
Yeah,
we wish, don't we?
So
we
have gotten through the New Year's Day festivities. We have made it into 2013. Has your family got some new goals set before them this year, Jeannie?
Well, you know, I don't know if they do or not. Maybe communication would be a good one for us.
I'll tell them.
Yeah. Do you have goals?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that this morning because I think we all need them. I posted a new building block on my website that talks about setting goals and the benefits a family can attain when they set goals.
And what is your website? In case people
rebuildingfamilies.net. You can find that building block on the home page. And what happens when we set goals, they're like those, when you're on the highway, you see the mile markers, mile one, mile two, mile 99.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the progress you've made going into the year. And it just helps teach discipline when you have goals. It helps your family see things to celebrate. So I just think we ought to all set a few of those. Whether they're long-term, short-term, and a little of both.
You're the second person who has urged me to do that. And I was actually, I don't normally do goals, but I was just this afternoon going to make goals and send them to her. She sent hers to me. She lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I thought, okay, I'll do it. And so this is number two telling me to do it. So I appreciate that. I think you're right. I keep thinking, well, because mine are just huge, and I couldn't possibly get them all done this year. But some of them I could, and that'll probably keep, is that right, keep reminding me? Is that what you have in mind, Maxine?
Yeah, keep reminding you. I'm trying to call our guest now. Let's see if we can get her
sorry.
In. Oh, I think she's just come on.
She's on.
I'll hang up that phone call, and we'll welcome Joan.
Hello.
Hi, Joan.
Hello.
Are you there?
Hi.
Whoops. I think we lost her again.
We lost her. Well,
let's
try that
one again.
She has a good book.
I think maybe she was there only because I was dialing her number, so I will dial her again.
Okay.
See if we can get her back. But we've got an excellent guest today.
We do, and let me just kind of talk a little bit about her, or do you want to, you try to call her? I don't have her number, so.
Well, her name is Joan Callender, and she's the author of Second Time Around, Help for Grandparents Who Raise Their Children's Kids, and a freelance writer who's written for the Oregonian and the Portland Family Magazine. She's an experienced speaker who has motivated relative caregivers from Connecticut to California. Her grandson, who became her son, Chad Dingell, co-authored this book, Addiction in Families, a Survival Guide, with Joan. He is now a 22-year-old college student who served as a small group leader for young boys in his church and enjoys dirt biking, video games, and playing his guitar. He was a 3-year letterman in downhill ski racing in high school and a member of the Air Force ROTC Silver Talons drill team while attending Oregon State University as a freshman. This is an amazing book, and I don't know why Joan keeps not hanging on our switchboard here.
Oh.
She has disappeared again. But I've got to tell you, Jeannie, you've looked at this book and I've looked at it.
Yes.
And we will try to get her back here with us in just a minute. If,
yes.
For whatever reason, we're not holding her on the line today, and I don't quite know why. But we'll try it again.
Are you calling her?
Well, I'm trying to again.
Okay, then I'll stop.
Were you attempting? Okay, she's back with us now. Joan, are you there?
Okay.
Well, let's see. Let me just see if
Joan, are you there?
I don't know
why
we can't.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We're having sight trouble
today.
Yes.
Interesting trouble, but I'm not quite sure why she can't get in. Joan, if you're able to listen, would you just get into the program on the website? Go to rebuildingfamilies.net and click on the KRVR site, and you will find a way to get into the switchboard because we really would like to hear from you.
Yeah, she's gone again.
Yes.
She's back.
And she's not hanging on to us here.
Let's just talk a little bit about this book, which I am going to recommend to friends because I think it's well written, don't you, Maxine?
Oh, I was amazed with it, actually, as I kept reading through it. Joan, our number is 424-675-8246, if you can hear what we're telling you. Please call.
And then press
the
1 so you can talk to us, yes.
She has written an extraordinary book along with her grandson, and it tells of stories that are quite common in today's world where we've got another family member raising a child for one of our children that actually we're not the birth parent, but we've got to step in. Or if we are a birth parent, or maybe there's a parent with an addiction that's affecting a child or a child with an addiction, it can be anywhere along that relationship continuum.
And that is so common, isn't it? I mean, I just can't believe how many grandparents I see raising grandchildren these days. And don't you think that it's generally the same reason or often the same reason because of addiction? Not always. But it's
not
just
always,
really,
but that's
not always.
Huge. Yeah, but it's huge, isn't
yes.
it? It really
it is huge.
Part of what's going on in society today that needs
yes.
help. And Joan has found ways to help people. In this book, she puts people in touch with resources. She gives help. She explains their story along the way. And I can't say enough about the helps you can find in here because they're based on real-life successes.
And you know what I really like about it? I really like the fact that her grandson adds his little bit to, not a little bit, but he adds his thoughts as she goes along in different prints. Like right here, can I just read one?
Yeah.
It says, page 56, for little kids, I think it's really a big deal for them to see their birth parent. Yeah, they're in a bad place, but kids don't understand that. And seeing that their mom or dad still exists is important. When they're older, then it depends entirely on relationship and if they want to go. You have to ask them and yourself if there's a benefit. It's not about the parent. In other words,
yeah,
it's
I
for
like
the child.
How that went. I liked that.
Yeah, I like his voice. That's just one paragraph in his voice, and it's a tough one. Hey, look at what she says on page 60, Maxine, about parental input and incarcerated parents. She says, ask incarcerated parents how they feel about visits.
Yeah, ask the parent, but also, you're on page 60?
Yes, I am. Right where it says parental input, yes.
Yeah, you ask them, but you've also got to consider the age appropriateness, consider the situation. And that chapter was interesting because there were boundaries and expectations on those child visits. The importance, though, having been one who's visited someone in prison over the years, I have seen the setup where it's very family-friendly and it's a blessing to both sides. It encourages the parent to want to get well, to get out of that place, but it can also be just as negative, I suppose, if the dynamics are not correct.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you still love the parent, obviously. It's your child if you're the grandparent, and it's your parent if you're the child. So you want to do as much as you can to keep that relationship. But
yes. Yeah. Joan, have we got you back with us? Joan? No, I don't know why we can't hold her on the line today. This is ridiculous.
Looks like her mic's lit up now. Are you there, Joan?
No, I just there's a dial.
It's
but
the
she,
phantom.
It's the phantom Joan calendar.
Oh, that's a shame.
She
well,
does
Joan,
exist.
We she does exist. We can we can tell you by her red microphone. But it's a shame we aren't getting her. This is a really excellent book, and you've read the whole thing, Maxine. I've looked through it. I haven't read all of it, but
yeah, I really have read it, and what I liked a great deal about this was the way Chad, the child's input, was brought into the story. In fact, he's one of the things that he brings out is do not count on addicts for holidays. The family at your house, that's the family you want to be with. It causes more hurt to try to revolve the day around a user and have them be a no-show or have them come and it not be that amazing. So it breaks their hearts. There's not much you can do about it.
Yeah.
But then the sorrow is into the day.
Yeah.
And Chad was a boy who had physical abuse plus emotional abuse. He had to overcome those issues in his young life, and eventually the grandparent became the parent, and her husband adopted this boy, and he became their son, and he chose to call them mom and dad. It became more difficult to keep. She tells how it becomes more difficult when you start identifying yourself along the way continually as the grandmother. Because people then have more questions. And it opens the door for more discussions and the why questions to come around. And the child gets caught in the middle of more why questions and feels
like... That's a
hard
one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because you don't want to discount your own child who you love desperately, and you don't want to cause those kind of problems. It's really hard.
Yeah. And but in this book, she goes into a lot of the legal terms that people will need to know, handling the legal stuff, and how to deal with what's dangerous and what's not. How many of their friends should you allow to come over? She talks about the visitation. She talks about giving access to the child if there's going to be more downside to seeing the parent or the one that is using, then you should make some boundaries that are going to be acceptable.
You know, what she also talks about is negative, speaking negatively. And I think that is just a really important one. And she's talking about ditch the word raising, which implies work, and just do your best to be positive in raising a child. That's positive in every life, but especially, I think, in this life.
Joan, have we got
we have
you finally? Joan, are you online with us?
I am.
Oh, good.
I'm good.
We're trying
We're
to
so
fill
glad.
In your story for us.
I Ooh. Am. I'm so sorry. I finally ran and got somebody else's phone.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with you, but we are glad you are with us.
Oh,
so would
yes.
you tell us a little bit about your family situation right now, and then we'd like to dig deep into the helps we can give these people who are listening today.
Okay, well, basically, I was following along a little bit what you were saying, and I did adopt my grandson, and he is now 20, and we went through a lot of ups and downs. He was abused physically as a child by both his birth mom, who's my daughter, and his birth dad, and through the process, it was very traumatic when he was with his dad, ended up with post-traumatic stress. Was with me for a number of years, and then his mother had promised him that she would never go back into drugs. She did, and that kind of threw him back into a huge huge tailspin. And so it took us lots and lots of years of counseling, and but I'm really happy to say that he's doing wonderfully. He's in college, and things have just really turned around, so we feel very blessed.
Okay, Joan, one of the things that you said in this book, and I say it's very well written, full of great resources, is that when it comes to counseling, beware about using the school counselors that are available. Why would that be?
Because they tend to share information with the teachers, and oftentimes, like in our own case, we had an instance where it was totally misrepresented. They said that there had been sexual abuse, not physical abuse, and then Chad was accused of some things, and when we finally got down to the bottom of it, they said, oh, well, if there wasn't any sexual abuse, then obviously there isn't any problem. And, you know, there had been great problems, and other grandparents or even parents have talked to me about things that, and it's not always a counselor that does it intentionally, but in sharing information, sometimes it's wrong or it leads to negative stereotypes. So you just need to be very, very cautious about what you choose to use and what you don't use. Also, if you've got a child that is very severely impacted by life experiences, you really need somebody that is trained and has experience in dealing with abandonment issues, scars that can come from living with a parent that is basically emotionally abusing them, parents where there might be physical abuse, because there's some very, very different issues that school counselors just are not equipped to handle.
Go ahead, Jeannie.
Did Chad ever know that he was accused of sexual abuse? Did he learn that?
I don't think that we ever really talked about that.
Okay. Yeah.
He was like second grade when it happened.
Yeah.
So
I liked, Joan, was on page 104 where there were 25 things he wrote down he could do when he was angry to get nice again. I thought that was really fun.
Right.
We all need those.
Yeah, can we copy his list?
We do.
Keep it by my bed. And,
yeah, no, it was a really good thing. Chad had a lot of physical anger, and so one of the things that his counselor did was have him put down that list, and so he could kind of go to it and say, okay, I am really, really upset, so I'm going to do jumping jacks, or I'm going to go out and I'm going to run for 10 minutes and give myself the space to calm down, and then I can talk about it rationally. Mm-hmm. And by him coming up with the list, then he already had buy-in on it. It wasn't like me saying, you need to take a break, you know, go outside and walk for 10 minutes and then come back.
Yeah, but he actually in high school then became suicidal and was cutting. And how did
he go
from his list at age 10 to becoming, you know, was he back with his father in between that time?
No, what actually happened was he was with me when he was age 3. When he was 4, he was with his dad, and then he came back after about 8 months. He was with me all the rest of the time, but we had gone through counseling then afterwards, got him pretty much stabilized, and then my daughter was in our life, and she went from being 10 years sober to an alcoholic, and it just threw him into a complete tailspin. And it was like she made me these promises that she would never do this again, she would never hurt me, she wouldn't hurt my stepsisters, she didn't keep them, and it was like just 8th grade, 9th grade, and he just couldn't cope with it. And so we then had to go back into counseling, and this was where he was, you know, he was at that stage of his life where, you know, the hormones are kicking in, that they're into a different type of school in middle school, you know, that's still pretty sheltered. In high school, they're just kind of dumped in mainstream, and he just really wasn't coping well.
What were some of the things that you, as a parent, were able to do to keep boundaries clear around Chad to where he felt safe but knew he had to be accountable?
It was very difficult. I mean, he was a very, very challenging child to raise. Obviously, there was a lot of fear and anxiety on my part because he was suicidal. But at the same time, I really had to say to him constantly, these are our rules. This is our house. You will respect your dad and I as your parents. You don't have to agree with us, but you do have to show us respect. And there were some times where he would threaten, and it got to the point where there was physical, you know, he'd punch a hole through the wall and he'd have to say, you know, this, you cannot do this. There would also be times where he would threaten to just run away. And at those times, I had to say to him, I am sorry, but if you walk out the door, you need to know that I will call the police because I have to keep you safe. As a parent, that's my job, and I can't do it the way you're acting right now. So that's what I'm going to have to do.
You know, one of the things that I really liked in this book, another person that we interviewed recently said, and that is you give scenarios and then you practice. Like you practice, you know, what if somebody would say to him, why do you live with your grandma and grandpa? And then he says, what? What's an example of what he would say?
He can simply, oftentimes it's very easy, depending upon the age, of course, you know, but with younger children, a really good thing to say is, I live with my grandma and grandpa just like you live with just your mom, or like Susie lives with her dad. And usually that is adequate enough. By the time they start getting into high school, then they have to pick and choose a little bit more about how much information they actually want to share or don't want to share. For example, they might just simply say, I live with my grandma and grandpa because my mother is uses drugs, or my mother lives out of town. You know, they have a whole range, and that's kind of what Chad and I did, is we talked about, okay, what are some things that you can say that you may want to share some details? What are some things where you simply basically are giving a non-answer, and that is, you know, my mom and dad don't live in town, so I live with my grandma and grandpa. You know, I need to ask you to respect my privacy, and then they direct the conversation off to something else.
I like that role-playing part. Yeah, really important. I do too. The more we can equip these parents, because I know this is a huge issue, and I like how you're bringing out the abandonment piece, Joan, that's attached to what is taking place in this child. And what is amazing is they're so young when the stress syndrome sets in upon them, that post-traumatic. We don't often attach that to a young child. And so that's an eye-opener in this book. And then to have the promise broken and throw the child into being suicidal and cutting and wanting to hurt himself so his emotional pain stops. I mean, these are huge. You've got some terms in here that some people might not be familiar with, like post-traumatic stress syndrome. We do hear about that with the military people in particular. But what is reactive attachment disorder?
You know, I want to be really honest and say I don't know a lot about reactive attachment disorder. So that's probably one where I'm not really qualified to give you a real good answer. I know there's a little tiny bit about it in the book. But, for example, like attention deficit is something that maybe more of the readers are aware of. And those are some of the things that many parents, if their spouse or ex-spouse is a user, they may have to deal with a genetic predisposition towards something like attention deficit, or they may have something like post-traumatic stress, which is a result of. But in either case, it does make it much more difficult for them to parent because they've got this added layer on top of all the normal things that kids are dealing with. And one of the things that I didn't realize until we got into the situation, and many of the people that I know that are similar to us have the same thing, and that is that for children, the first 9 months is very critical in terms of, can they bond with other people? Can they develop the social, as we talked a little bit earlier, boundaries that you need to have to understand how somebody else is feeling to not cross over those boundaries, to pick up social cues and that type of thing. And that's one of the things I think that's so sad that we're seeing in some of the really violence that's happened, whether it's at the town center shooting or Sandy Hook or a lot of the other kinds of things, is some of these children that come from homes where there's been drugs or there have been alcohol or some other problems very early on, they miss some very critical points in their development. And so as someone that's parenting them, you need to really have a lot of support and some people that you can go to and say, you know, this is what's happening. Did you have you ever come across this? And it may be just another parent, and they can say, oh, yes, I did, or no, I didn't, but I know so-and-so, or there's a support group for this, or it's a good question, you know, that you may want to ask a counselor. So there's kind of a spectrum of things and help out there that you can do if you're aware of the fact that there's going to be some holes in these kids and some things that you need to help them fill in, which you can do. It's not that they can go back and replace that time, but they can learn some coping skills or some awareness, and that's what we do with the communication, I think, in terms of giving them answers and things so that you're also exposing them with some additional thought processes about, well, you know, how would you feel if that happened to your sister or your brother? You're teaching them empathy, in other words.
Yeah, cause that's not always natural as in some of these children. Another feature of your book is how you validate emotions. They don't need a label. We let them have their emotional feelings, and then the behaviors need to be dealt with, though, right?
Right. And I say that emotion is much for the adults as I do the kids, because
okay.
I think one of the things that's very, very difficult, whether it's your adult son or daughter, you know, that may be the addict that's caused all this pain for everybody, you still feel really guilty because it's your child, and you feel like you should love your child regardless of what they're doing or what, you know, they've done in the past. You're also angry with them because, you know, they've hurt their kids. And so you kind of get caught up in this round robin, if you will, of, you know, I love them, but I hate what they're doing. I don't even know if I like them anymore. They've changed so much. They're not the child, you know, that I raised them to be. But I feel guilty because it must have been something that I did wrong, or I could have seen, or, you know, the coulds, the shoulds. We kind of all go through those. And so I think sometimes if you simply don't even try to label how you feel about the addict or the alcoholic and simply say, it is what it is. And like you say, then you move on to the behavior and you say, okay, these are the boundaries that I'm putting around me. These are the boundaries that I'm putting around the rest of the family who may be too young to set their own boundaries.
And you even bring up the fact that you might have to kick out an addicted child to protect everyone else. That's a tough one, but it might have to happen. Why is that?
There's been a number of people, bless their hearts, that shared information with me that have had to actually do this. And just so that, you know, it's not always my story that people are hearing, I think it's important to know that if you have other siblings at home, for example, that are minors, and you have one that is bringing drugs into the home or is getting their siblings drunk or high or whatever, you have to do some things to cut off that contact. And if you've tried to get them counseling, you've tried to put them in treatment centers, and it's not working, because until an addict wants to change, they're not going to change, then sometimes you just simply have to say, you know, it breaks my heart, but you're going to have to go find yourself another place to live. You don't want to change. We've tried to work with you. We've tried to offer you help. And so, you know, you've got a week or two or 2 hours or whatever is appropriate given the circumstances, you know, or a month or two, and then you're out of here. Because you simply can't have that kinds of behaviors around other young children, and other young children being, in my mind, anyone that, you know, is still high school or below.
Right. So when it comes to getting one out of your house. I think another reason might be because you might be bringing the cops to your doorstep to find drugs in your closets and perhaps in your rooms that have been planted there by this person who continues to wreak havoc on the rest of the family unless he's dealt with. This is that whole tough love thing, isn't it, Joan?
It really is. And I thought I had a pretty good grasp of what tough love was when we started this. But as the years went by and we went through, you know, prison and trials and the suicide of a couple of roommates of my daughter about the time when Chad was physically abused when he was very, very young, back at age two, it just kept getting wider and wider, and I realized that I didn't have a clue because this was a world I had no exposure to. And I kept expecting that my daughter would react rationally, and that was how I was appealing to her. It was rationally and logically, and it took me a long, long time to understand that when somebody is using drugs, whether that's alcohol or cocaine or whatever it happens to be, your mind is physically, chemically changed, and they are not going to be reacting the way that you and I would react.
What do you have to say to a parent who is facing the possibility of having to send their child away from home, and they believe, and very probably truthfully, that if they don't let the child live with them and wreak havoc, but if they don't let the child live with them, that the child will probably die because of their actions? What advice would you give them? What would you say to them?
I think kind of my sister-in-law was actually faced with this, and I like the advice that she gave to me, and that was simply that, you know, I love you, but I can't help you, so therefore, you have to get out of the house. I'm hoping that you're going to find the help. You know, we've talked about places that you could call, things that you can do when you're ready to do those, and then that was really all that she could communicate with her son. But I think that Debbie Macomber is, many of your listeners probably are aware of her. She's a great novelist.
Yeah.
And she's also written a couple of books that I found really helped me. And in one of them, there was a mother who saw her son was on drugs and she did not know where he was. But she saw another young man on a very, very cold night outside with no gloves on, and she went and she bought him a pair of gloves, and she gave the gloves to him, and she said she said a prayer for the young man. She said a prayer that someone would step into her son's life and do what she couldn't do at that particular time, and she said a prayer for the mother and father of the child. And I think that's sometimes you're kind of in that situation. And I'm kind of back there again, sadly enough, with my daughter, where I now know I can't do anymore. All I can do is give her up to God and hope that God will put the people in her life that can help her, that have the ability to break through to her and say, your life is really screwed up, and help her in getting the counseling that she needs, the jobs, the homes, all the different pieces that she needs, whether it's through like Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a wonderful organization, or, some of the church organizations, or there's a variety of help out there if people want it.
There certainly is. Joan, we are really running out of time. Could you tell our listeners how to get a hold of you and how to find this book?
Certainly. They can get the book on Amazon, but they have to put in the title of Families and Addictions, Addiction and Families, A Survival Guide. And then they have to put in either my last name or Chad's last name, because professionally I go by Calendar, which is spelled C-A-L-L-A-N-D-E-R. Or they can put in Dingle, which is mine and Chad's last name, D-I-N-G-L-E, and it will come up. Or they can go to my website, which is www.joan, calendar, C-A-L-L-A-N-D-E-R.com. And they can order the book through there also.
Okay. Well, Jeannie,
my phone
do you have
number?
One last? We probably won't release a phone number, but we'll
okay,
just let them go to your website and contact you that way.
Yeah, that would be great. I was going to.
Yeah, Jeannie, do you want to ask Joan one more question? Or make a comment?
You know, I would just like to say I have friends going through exactly what she's going through right now. And I believe that this is, I'm so sorry any of you have to do this, anybody has to do this, but I believe that your story will be an encouragement. And so I just thank you for that and hope people get your book.
Why, thank you so much for having me on, and I'm so sorry about our technical difficulties.
Well, Joan, would you like to leave a parting comment with our listeners? We sure thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just don't give up. Do not give up. Reach out to other people, and you will find someone, you know, to help support you, and then in turn you can help support other people.
Well,
thank you,
Joan. We've been talking with Joan Callender. Her book is awesome. The resources, we have not even begun to tap the surface of what she has got in this book for you to find that will help you navigate your family situation with an addictive family member. God bless you. We'll talk to you next time.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books, plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.